Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, Phil Dierking has a report about Portuguese food. Later, we hear the American story, Transience in Arcadia, by O. Henry. And we listen to a little more of an interview with Oprah Winfrey from the Academy of Achievement Archives. But first, we hear about native groups in Cambodia who are fighting to save their lands from a threatening dam project. Here is Mario Ritter.
Cambodian groups are asking the government to stop the controlled flooding of their villages as a hydroelectric dam goes into operation. The floodgates of the lower Sai Son 2 hydropower dam are being closed, and water levels are rising in Stung Treng province. In time, many villages will be underwater. The villages are in eastern Cambodia near a river that flows into the Mekong, one of Southeast Asia's longest rivers. Government officials have urged people living in the area to move to new homes set up for them. Many people have already accepted compensation plans. But about 143 families remain. They say they want to stay where they have lived for generations. They also argue they want to remain near the burial places of their ancestors. The villagers have called on Prime Minister Hun Sen and the Ministry of the Interior to help them. A group from the village of Kabul Rumias and an ethnic minority recently met with an official of Cambodia's Interior Ministry in Phnom Penh. The group said they did not want to leave their homes. Instead, they wanted the government to give them official recognition of their ownership of the land. Some people have willingly moved. Sa Pon took a compensation offer and left Stung Treng province. "If we do something wrong, we pray in accordance with our traditions," he said, "and we pray so that we can be recovered." He used to be a fisherman, but many people in the area say fish catches have decreased on the river. So Sa Pon has built a new business selling household goods. He said he is doing well. "Before, I could not transport any goods. Now I can. The truck can get into our home to transport goods. Whatever I need, they can reach my home." But not everyone from the flooding villages is happy about having to move. Sa Pon's brother says the government wants to move them to poor quality land. "I really don't want to live there. The situation is difficult. There's not enough water. It's mountain land and it's rock and sandy, and very difficult to do agriculture," he said. Yun Lo Rang is a secretary coordinator for the Cambodian Indigenous Peoples Alliance. He is one of several activists who has been calling on native or indigenous people to reject compensation and fight relocation efforts. He said relocation will result in the death of native ways of life and their connection with the land. The dam is estimated to have cost more than $800 million. It is to be Cambodia's biggest dam producing 400 megawatts of electricity. However, the dam will flood 335 square kilometers, and with it, the way of life of many native people. Environmentalists argue that the dam will affect the local fishing industry. A report published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2012 warns of a drop in fish stocks. It says the Mekong River will lose more than 9% of its fisheries because of the lower Sai San II Dam. An environmental study sought by the developer of the dam and approved by Cambodia's government also found problems. In 2010, it said that fish populations would be severely hurt because the dam would block migratory species of fish. A debate continues over whether the economic gains and electricity produced by the dam will be greater than the loss of fish and water. The Ministry of Mines and Energy has not answered requests for comments about the project. Cambodia's energy needs are increasing quickly. The dam is supposed to provide electricity for 5 Cambodian provinces. The project is a joint effort by Cambodian, Chinese, and Vietnamese companies. I'm Mario Ritter.
Coming up is our weekly show, American Stories. But first, we listen to an excerpt of an interview with Oprah Winfrey as part of the podcast series, What It Takes. You can find the full podcast on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Here, Winfrey has been asked if she faced a lot of racism or sexism in her career in broadcasting and film.
I would have to say that I, for the most part, have not been, as far as I know, affected. As a matter of fact, it was because of the riots of the 70s that I think they were looking for minorities. They were trying to fulfill all of their quotas and programs. And so I was hired as a token and had to take the heat from my college classmates. I went to an all-black college with them calling me a token. And I used to say, yeah, but I'm a paid token. And I recognized that, and at the time I didn't even know it was a pun. I was thinking, yeah, but they pay me. And I was very defensive about it because I've always had to live with the notion of other black people saying, oh, for any amount of success that you achieve, they say, oh, you're trying to be white, you're trying to talk white, you're trying to be white, and so forth, which is such a ridiculous notion to me. Since you look in the mirror every morning and you're black, there's a black face in your reflection.
When you ask Americans about European foods, many people talk about their favorite meals from Italy, France, or even Germany. But food and drink from another European country, Portugal, is growing in popularity both in the United States and other areas. In fact, while Portugal may not have as many famous dishes as its European neighbors, Portuguese tastes have influenced food and restaurants from Europe to Asia, Africa, and the Americas. Many areas have been touched by Portuguese tastes in some way. with Portugal's long colonial history and immigrant population around the world, Portuguese cooking is finding an important place in many homes. The story of Portugal's influence on food is tied to its centuries as a colonial power. Portugal was one of the first European countries to start exploring the world. At one time, Portugal controlled territory on almost every continent. Along their travels, Portuguese explorers, sailors, businessmen, and clergy left their mark on the cultures and food they encountered. To understand the effect Portuguese cooking has had, it is important to describe some of the food itself. There are many different Portuguese foods. However, Portugal is perhaps most famous for its fish. With a coastline nearly 1,800 kilometers long, fish and seafood are not hard to find. Portugal actually has the fourth highest fish consumption per person of any country in the world. The most common kind of fish in Portuguese cooking is cod. Portuguese crews have been fishing for cod since the 15th century. Because this tradition started long before the invention of refrigeration equipment, the cod is almost always dried and salted. Most fish in Portugal is then served either dried, as is, boiled in water, or roasted over a fire. Sardines are another popular fish. Other Portuguese dishes use seafood like octopus, squid, crabs, and shrimp. In the past, many of Portugal's pastries were made by Catholic religious workers. The main ingredient for any pastry is egg yolks. One of the most famous tasty treats is called pastéis de nata. They are small, rich, creamy tarts. These baked goods can be found all over Portugal and also in many of Portugal's former colonies, like Brazil. Portugal is famous all over the world for its alcoholic drinks. Perhaps the most famous wine is a sweet, dark red port made from grapes in northern Portugal. Another important wine is Madeira. Madeira was probably the most popular wine in North America from the time the first Europeans arrived until the middle of the 1800s. It comes from the islands of Madeira, a popular stopping point for European ships on their way across the Atlantic Ocean. During the American Revolution against British rule, Britain restricted foreign imports to its American colonies. Yet, the British did permit imports from the islands of Madeira. General George Washington was known to drink Madeira wine. He is reported to have celebrated with drinks after the signing of the Declaration of Independence and his swearing in as the first President of the United States. Pork, beef, and chicken are also all popular in the Portuguese diet. They are often cooked on a grill. The meat is often seasoned with spices that the Portuguese collected from their travels around the world. A popular dish that many Portuguese have at the beginning of a meal is a soup called caldo verde. This is made from potato puree, sliced kale, and cuts of sausage. While Portuguese food is important by itself, what is most interesting is how it influenced food in other countries. One example can be found on the other side of the world, in Japan. the Portuguese started trading with Japan in 1543. The two sides continued trading for almost a century. During that time, a Portuguese fried green bean specialty called peixinhos de horta was passed on to the Japanese. Today in Japan, that kind of cooking is called tempura. It is used with green beans, shrimp, and other foods. The Portuguese also left an influence on Goa in western India, which they controlled from 1510 until 1961. The Portuguese in Goa cooked a dish using pork and a topping made from wine and garlic. This dish later became popular with many Indians. Now called vindaloo, it remains popular in the country today. Portuguese food has not been as well known in the United States until recently. That began changing with the rise of the popular fast food restaurant Nando's Peri Peri. The eatery's main offering is chicken served with a spicy seasoning that comes from Mozambique, a former Portuguese colony. The very first Nando's Peri Peri opened in South Africa. But the restaurant chain now has eateries all over Africa, Australia, and North America. The chain also sells the spicy Peri Peri sauce, which has become famous. Portugal is no longer known just for its cooking, but also for its many foods. It is important to recognize that many of the things you eat today could have already been influenced by the Portuguese many years ago. I'm Phil Dierking.
And now, the program American Stories. Today, we hear Transients in Arcadia by O. Henry.
There is a certain hotel on Broadway that is very pleasant in the summer. Not many people have heard about it. It is wide and cool. Its rooms have walls of dark wood. There are green trees around it and soft winds. It has all the pleasures of mountain living and none of the pains. You will eat better fish there than you could catch for yourself in the streams and hills. You will have better meat than a hunter brings home from the forest. A few have discovered this cool spot in the hot summer of New York. You will see these few guests eating dinner in the hotel restaurant. They are happy to be there, and happy to know that they are very few. They feel especially wise because they have found this delightful place. More waiters than necessary are always near. They bring what is wanted before anyone asks for it. The pleasing distant noise of Broadway sounds like running water in a forest. At every strange footstep, the guests turn quickly and look. They are afraid that the restless pleasure seekers will find their hotel and destroy its pleasant quiet. And so these few live during the hot season. They enjoy the delights of mountain and seashore. All is brought to them in their Broadway hotel. This summer, a lady came to the hotel giving this name.
Madame Eloise d'Arcy Beaumont.
The name was like a name in the story of a great romance. And Madame Beaumont was the kind of lady the Hotel Lotus loved. She was beautiful, and her manner was very fine. Everyone wished to serve her. The other guests believed that, as a guest, she was perfection. This perfect guest did not often leave the hotel. In this, she was like the other guests of the Hotel Lotus. To enjoy that hotel, one needed to forget the city. New York might have been miles away. At night, sometimes one might go out, but during the hot day, one remained in the cool shade of the Lotus. Madame was alone in the Hotel Lotus. She was alone as a queen is alone because of her high position. She rose from bed late in the morning. She was then a sweet, soft person who seemed to shine quietly. But at dinner, she was different. She would wear a beautiful dress. I cannot find words fine enough to tell about it. Always there were red flowers at her shoulder. When the head waiter saw a dress like this, he met it at the door. You thought of Paris when you saw it, and of the theater, and of old romances. A story about Madame Beaumont was told among the guests in the Hotel Lotus. It was said that she was a woman who had traveled all over the world. It was said that she knew the most important people everywhere. It was said that in her white hands she held the future of certain nations. It was no surprise, they said, that such a lady should choose the Hotel Lotus. It was the most desirable and the most restful place in America during the heat of summer. On the third day of Madame Beaumont's stay in the hotel, a young man entered as a guest. His clothes were quiet, but good. His face was pleasant. His expression was that of a man who had traveled and could understand the world. He said that he would remain 3 or 4 days. He asked about the sailing of certain ships. He seemed to like this hotel the best of all he had known. The young man put his name down on the list of hotel guests. Harold Farrington. It was a name with a fine sound, and the young man belonged perfectly in the quiet life of the Lotus. In one day he became like all the other guests. Like them, he had his table and his waiter. He also had the same fear that the wrong people might suddenly discover this hotel and destroy its peace. After dinner on the next day, Madame Beaumont dropped something as she passed Harold Farrington's table. He picked it up and, following her, returned it. He spoke only a few quiet words as he did this, and she was pleased by his good manners. She knew that he was a gentleman. Guests of the Lotus seemed to understand each other very easily. Perhaps it was the result of having discovered this Broadway hotel. Guests felt sure that only especially fine people would enjoy the cool delights of the Lotus. Now, very quickly, a sudden friendship grew between Farrington and Madame Beaumont. They stood and talked for a few moments.
"I have seen too much of the usual summer hotels,"
said Madame Beaumont, with a small but sweet smile.
"Why go to the mountains or the seashore? We cannot escape noise and dust there. The people who make noise and dust follow us there."
"Even on the ocean," said Farrington sadly. "Those same people are all around us. What shall we do when they discover the Lotus?"
"I hope they don't discover the Lotus this week,"
said Madame.
"I only know one other place I like as well. It is the beautiful home of a prince in the mountains in Europe."
"The best people," said Farrington, "are seeking for the quiet places like this one, where they can escape the crowds."
"I promise myself 3 more days of this delightful rest,"
said Madame Beaumont.
"The next day, my ship sails."
Harold Farrington's eyes showed that he was sorry. "I too must leave then," he said. "But I am not sailing for Europe."
"We cannot stay here forever, though it is so delightful,"
said Madame Beaumont.
"I like it better than my usual life, which is too full of people. I shall never forget my week in the Hotel Lotus."
"Nor shall I," said Farrington in a low voice, "and I shall never like the ship that carries you away." On their last evening, the two sat together at a little table. A waiter brought them something cool to eat. Madame Beaumont was wearing the same beautiful dress. She seemed thoughtful. When she had finished eating, she took out a dollar.
"Mr. Farrington,"
she said with a smile that everyone in the Lotus loved,
"I want to tell you something. I am going to leave early tomorrow morning because I must go back to work. I work selling women's clothes at Casey's shop. That dollar is all the money I have. I won't have any more till I get paid at the end of the week. You're a real gentleman, and you've been good to me. I wanted to tell you before I went. For a year, I've been planning to come here. Each week, I put aside a little of my pay so I would have enough money. I wanted to live one week like a rich lady. I wanted to get up in the morning when I wished. I wanted to be served by waiters. I wanted to have the best of everything. Now I've done it, and I've been happier than I ever was before. And now, I'm going back to work. I wanted to tell you about it, Mr. Farrington, because I thought you liked me, and I liked you. This week I've told you many things that weren't true. I told you things I've read about. They never happened to me. I've been living in a story. It wasn't real. I wanted you to think I was a great lady. This dress I'm wearing, it's the only pretty dress I own. I haven't paid for it yet. I'm paying for it a little at a time. The price was $75. It was made for me at O'Dowd and Levinsky's shop. I paid $10 first, and now I have to pay a dollar a week until it's all paid. And that's all I have to say, Mr. Farrington, except that my name is Mamie Siviter, and not Madame Beaumont. Thank you for listening to me. This dollar is the dollar I'm going to pay for my dress tomorrow. And now, I'll go up to my room."
As Harold Farrington listened, his face had not changed. When she had finished, he took out a small book and began to write in it. Then he pulled out the small page with his writing on it and gave it to her, and he took the dollar from her hand. "I go to work, too, tomorrow morning," he said, "and I decided to begin now. That paper says you've paid your dollar for this week. I've been working for O'Dowd and Levinsky for 3 years. Strange, isn't it? We both had the same idea. I always wanted to stay at a good hotel. I get $20 a week. Like you, I put aside a little money at a time until I had enough. Listen, Mamie, will you go to the pleasure park on Coney Island with me on payday?" The girl who had been Madame Eloise d'Arcy Beaumont smiled.
"I'd love to go, Mr. Farrington. Coney will be all right. Although, we did live with rich people for a week."
They could hear the night noises of the hot city. Inside the Hotel Lotus, it was cool. The waiter stood near, ready to get anything they asked for. Madame Beaumont started up to her room for the last time. And he said, "Forget that Harold Farrington, will you? McManus is the name. James McManus. Some call me Jimmy."
"Good night, Jimmy,"
said Madame.
That's all the time we have for today's show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same place, same time. Hope you return too. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.